The following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
And we welcome you to the Commodore Hour on this beautiful Monday in Nashville. It is great to have you with us. I'm Kevin Ingram, our producer, Matt Present. Max Herr is, of course, here in Nashville as well. And it is terrific to be with you this evening as we talk some Vanderbilt sports. We're going to have Coach Tim Corbin for a couple segments here in just a moment. Also, bowling coach John Williamson. His team beat Louisiana Tech for the Southland Conference Championship over the weekend. And our Black and Gold Club segment a little bit later on. 1997 lacrosse alum Michelle Sebastian Gleason will join us. She's played lacrosse. She's coached lacrosse. She has commentated on it and has also done stand-up. So it should be a fun conversation with Michelle coming up a little bit later. We will take a quick break and come back with Coach Corbin after Vanderbilt won 2 out of 3 against South Carolina over the weekend. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG. Welcome back to Commodore Hour, brought to you in part by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Education Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in the state of Tennessee. Great to have you with us, and it's always great to have Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin with us. Coach Corbin is on the line now after the Commodores won 2 out of 3 over the weekend against South Carolina in the opening weekend of SEC play. 3-2 in a tight one on Friday. Kamar Rocker went 8 innings, struck out 14. Cooper Davis, the go-ahead single in the 7th. 5-0 on Saturday, the memorable Jack Leiter no-hitter. 27 straight retired with 16 strikeouts and 2 Tate Colwick home runs. And on Sunday, it was 6-5 South Carolina. Vanderbilt led 4-0 and 5-2 before Carolina rally. C.J. Rodriguez did drive in 3, including his first career home run. Coach, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, Kevin. Thank you.
Let's talk about Jack, first of all. Jack Leiter wins Pitcher of the Week in the SEC. We talked some yesterday just about how well he handled everything. It seemed like, Tim, he was as excited about the series win as he was the no-hitter.
Well, yeah, I think that, and that's really the goal. I mean, it's to get the win. I think that's first and foremost. And even as he proceeded to the 7th, 8th, and 9th, you have those thoughts of what are we going to do here, and not really looking at the stat line and the fact that he has a no-hitter. If it works out and you can and move him forward and keep him in the game, it's one thing. But the reality is you just got to win that game, and it was still tightly contested. So, yeah, he did a good job of finishing it up. Jack is a mature kid. We've talked about that before. And he's very on task with what he's doing. So he kind of reaped some of the benefits that an athlete gets when they are so immersed in what they do and in their trade.
From a pitching perspective, what did he do so well technically?
Well, it's easy to talk about the fastball because, you know, the thing about a fastball, Kevin, is it's one thing to get through the order. It's another thing to get through the order a second time. But then getting through the third time becomes more of a challenge. And really, that's what he had to do. But the fastball was playing up continually throughout the game. And I think when you start to look at older pitchers like a Schilling or like a Clemens and you looked at their fastball, it didn't necessarily move that much, but it had great life when it got into the zone. And I think, you know, critically speaking for Jack, that's what it was. It was a ball that was boring in. Even the last pitch he threw to Wimmer was a fastball that stayed low and stayed on the same plane. And, you know, it was 96, 97 miles an hour. So he never lost any energy for the ball. And as he got closer to the end in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, he actually minimized pitches. So that really kept him in the game more than anything else because Brownie and I had that similar talk that we had 2 years ago when Rocker was getting close to the end against Duke. And, you know, it's one of those things where you want to preserve the situation for a kid, but at the same time, you got to be mindful because you know that, especially this week, where it's a quicker turnaround. You know, he's going to pitch on Friday night against Missouri. So you want to be mindful of that. But I just think he was frugal with his pitches as the game wore on, and I think that was the difference.
He was still going great when he got to the 9th, but you guys had guys ready in the bullpen. What was the plan for the 9th inning?
It was hitter for hitter, I think, more than anything yeah. else. Had he given up a hit, we would have taken him out of the game. A walk, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad I don't have to answer that question. But I felt the same way, you know, coach, because, you know, the health is important for the kid. That's the thing. It's a long season. We're only one series into it. So you want to be wise, and at some point we'll probably be able to pull him at a certain point in time. But this was a special case. And the fact that he was throwing a lot of fastballs, to us, you know, there wasn't a lot of strain to the breaking ball. There wasn't a lot of strain to the pitches. He uses his body very well. He's got great leverage to the pitch. He finishes the ball very well. So I thought in those cases right there, those were all pluses for Jack.
You want guys to be honest about how they're feeling when it gets deep into games, but how much do you like that competitiveness of him and Kumar and probably a lot of other guys on this team that they don't want to come out, you know, even though it might be that time?
Well, yeah, they don't want to come out, and they'll verbalize they don't want to come out. I mean, we had Rocker pulled in the seventh. After the seventh, he came in, and Brownie and I told Brownie, I said, that's it. That was especially once we started to extend the inning offensively and it got a little bit cooler. It's like we just didn't want him to go any further. So Brownie went down there, and Kumar said, I'm not coming out of the game. So when he says that to you, you say, okay, he's not coming out of the game. I mean, he's pretty defiant about it in a respectful way, of course. But you know when a kid feels like he's those kids, they earn that right. You know, it's like they work hard enough in this environment to where if they get there, they earn that right. And they've got a resume, and there's a trust built behind them. And when he went on the eighth inning, just like Jack did, they both got better. You know, it was like they found another gear to get to the finish line. And I think, to your point, those are the special guys. Those are the guys, and I brought that out to the team, that get to a certain point, they go, I'm going to finish this. And he got to the eighth, and that was more of a finish for us, and then we could hand the ball over to Luke, and that was done.
What did you like about Kumar's stuff back on Friday?
Progressively got better. I thought he shared the ball pretty well with the team as a whole. I thought he was just on point. That's a very good hitting team. Listen, if it isn't for Leiter and Rocker, we're talking about South Carolina's pitching. Because there's another side to the fact that we didn't have a lot of offensive success, and that was South Carolina's pitching. But Kumar and Leiter negated that talk because of how well they pitched. And I just felt like Kumar was very, very special on Friday night. And the fact that you actually had another pitcher that could outdo that performance, so to speak, was incredible.
Cooper Davis has had a bit of a rough stretch since he's come back, but that was a veteran at bat he had, you know, late in the game on Friday, just putting the ball in play to get that go-ahead run home.
Yeah, and that's what he needs to do. I mean, I think when Coop stays straight and he stays, you know, to the opposite side, I think favorable things happen to him, and he did. That was a big, big hit, and they played him up the middle a little bit more than I would say a lot of teams. You know, a lot of teams spread their second baseman and shortstop to cover the left side and cover the right side. They did not. But if you'd been watching film of Cooper as of late, as you have seen, he was pulling a lot of balls and he was coming off the ball. So it just made sense probably from a defensive standpoint to do that. But he did the next best thing, and that was stay on a fastball and flip it the other way with some energy and scored that run. And obviously, Friday night game, separated by one run. That's really how it usually happens. You know, it's a play, it's a pitch, it's a swing, and that was our swing.
Overall, pleased to get the series win?
Yeah, but, you know, you get to a certain point. You get selfish. You get into a sure. certain point. Team gets selfish. You want to be able to finish something off, and that would have been really, really special. I mean, we won the week. We played a tough game against Belmont. And then we came back and won a game Friday, had an emotional game Saturday with all that went on with Jack's situation. And again, into Sunday, you get off to a pretty good start. And Thomas got off to a pretty good start. But then, the momentum changed when Brett Carey came into the game. After he gave up the triple, it was Katie bar the door. We weren't going to sniff him offensively, and we didn't. He made us look pedestrian. And you got to give credit to him. That's an older pitcher who knows how to use his pitches. He knows how to decelerate. and he's a strike thrower. And boy, you look at the calmness of the kid. I mean, he stands out there chewing gum, and it's like, okay, this is a backyard wiffle ball game. And he made us look silly, and we had no answer for him, and that was disappointing. And what was also, disappointing too, and I told the kids, and, you know, it's not to put the onus on one kid, but we had two situations where we could have moved up a base and didn't, and those were two runs. You know, they had chance to move up on the ball that got away from the catcher to second base, next pitch, C.J. Rodriguez hits a single, just scores one rather than two, and then we were not able to tag up at third base, and that's unfortunate because those two runs were the difference.
I know you've been pleased, speaking of C.J., you've been pleased with him behind the plate, hit a home run yesterday. How much progress are you seeing in him from year one to year two in all phases of his game?
Yes, defensively, for sure. The way he handles pitchers. I mean, the other side of those performances is the catcher. And, you know, I've always said this about catchers, too, is if you don't notice them, they're doing a good job. It's kind of like an umpire. If you don't notice him calling pitches, he does a good job. If you notice him, you know, oh, boy, long night. But, you know, with a catcher, especially in Kumar's case, because of the breaking ball, and he had to block that thing about eight times with guys on base, and not one time did a runner move up. And that's RBI defense at its best, you know, when you don't move runners because you play good defense. And frankly, we did all week from a defensive standpoint, which was a good sign, because I think we're going to have to continue to do that. I mean, we've got an offense that's growing. I mean, it's certain times, like this weekend, it was frustrating to watch and frustrating to play for the kids too. It's not easy for them, but at the same time, if you're going to be in games, you got to pitch and play defense. And when you look at the defense, I look at CJ. CJ handles the pitchers very well. It's first series that he's caught all three guys, and I thought he did a great job.
Visiting with Coach Tim Corbin, we'll have more in just a moment. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. We're visiting with Coach Tim Corbin after Vanderbilt won 2 out of 3 against South Carolina over the weekend. It was 5-0 Friday, or 5-0 on Saturday after a 3-2 win on Friday. South Carolina won 6-5 yesterday. Going back to Friday, Tim, I thought maybe one of the more maybe unsung performances of the weekend was Luke Murphy in the ninth inning. Guy hasn't pitched in a couple weeks, has been away due to COVID, comes back, works around a walk with 3 strikeouts. He was terrific, you know, coming in there in a pressure spot and getting the job done for you.
Yeah, he really was. I mean, I think we didn't hesitate putting him in, but at the same time, your remembrance of him pitching last was a while. He was a couple of weeks. So the fact that he could get in there and right himself, particularly after throwing a couple pitches that were off of the glove, he came right back and threw strikes and just kind of maintained order. I mean, he's got a good heartbeat for that, and he controls his adrenaline very well for a relief pitcher and certainly has a good arm. And then we maxed him out a little bit the other day. We saved him, obviously, from pitching on Saturday because of Jack's performance. But he went in yesterday, and we had to extend him a couple innings more than what we had wanted. And he still did a pretty good job that way, too. They found some holes late in the game, and they did a good job of, we call it red zone hitting, when you get guys in scoring position and put the ball in play. I thought South Carolina did a good job just making contact off Luke to score those late runs. But all in all, he still did a good job of preserving the situation because we were still within reach at the end of the game.
You feel like your bullpen's starting to take shape, whether it's Luke or Ethan or, you know, some of the other guys. Nick Maldonado's done a good job for you?
A little bit, but there's still some other pieces there that I think you'll see and will see soon. You know, now, you know, like guys like Pat Riley and Miles Garrett, I mean, they've pitched, but I think they're going to find their way in situations that we haven't seen yet, and that's just going to be in time. With Chris McElvain, too. I mean, he's another guy that we'll use. But we didn't use a whole lot of pitchers this weekend, and they probably used about the same, but I just felt like, you know, obviously when you have a guy that goes the whole way on Saturday, it minimizes the chances for the usage of the pitchers. But, I do think we're getting there, but I don't think we're close yet.
We were talking in the last segment about CJ starting all three games. Where do you come down on having starting pitchers work with certain catchers? I mean, you sort of want them to be interchangeable, don't you?
Yes. You don't want to. You'd rather not have a pitcher that says, I only can do such and such with this guy. But I think we got to a point where, at least from the weekend, and I'm not going to say it's going to happen all the time, but we just had a situation where we wanted CJ to be able to catch Jack. And obviously did a nice job. But I think with catchers, listen, we got several that can do a good job receiving and catching the ball, like Max Romero and Dominic Keegan and Alan Espinal and even Jack Bulger. They just haven't been out there yet. So I think you'll see more of Max for certain, because he's got a good game ahead of him too, but yet he hasn't had a lot of experience. Didn't play last year, and he's only played five games up to this point. So we'll give him opportunities coming forward.
It was great to see Dominic back yesterday. What's the acclimation period going to be like for him after a couple weeks out?
Oh, again, kind of like Murph, but maybe more so with hitters. There's a timing mechanism that has to take place. And, you know, you can swing a bat, you can hit balls in a batting cage. That's not hitting. I mean, once you get into hitting, it's just realigning your mind again. It's getting in there and playing pitch for pitch and getting in the batter's box and getting comfortable. I think, you know, Dominic had a hit, but I thought his bat looked slow, and it's not his fault. It's just part of the process. And yeah. Oh, hell, everyone's bat looks slow against South Carolina. But Dominic's, getting back in there was certainly a good thing for him and good thing for our team, too. And he's a good first baseman as well. So that's certainly more growth moving forward for that young man.
Tate Colwick hit two home runs in the Saturday game. You moved him into the cleanup spot yesterday. What's realistic power-wise to expect from him?
I think what you're seeing, I've never put a, area of a number or anything, but, you know, he's the type of guy, because he's got pole-to-pole strength. I mean, he's that kid who can hit the ball at the left center field with juice. He can hit the ball to right center field. He's hit balls down the line out of here before. So, and I'm talking about opposite field. He's got a punch. And the thing about him is he's going to swing the same speed on a breaking ball, fastball, or changeup. He never slow plays the bat. I mean, once he makes a decision to move forward with a barrel, he's moving forward with it. And that's why we like him. I mean, he's done some damage in a lot of key areas, and certainly changed the scoreboard quick. But, for a smaller kid in stature, just height-wise, he's strong, man. He's a strong kid in the weight room, and he throws the barrel head pretty quickly through the zone. So, yeah, there's a lot of pluses to that kid. And he's just coming. He's only getting better every day.
We were talking yesterday about Enrique Branfield moving into the leadoff role. He really handles the bat well, doesn't he? He can give this team whatever is needed in a particular at bat, whether it's putting down a bunt or, you know, a sack fly. I mean, we've seen pretty much all of it from him so far.
Yeah, better and better and better all the time. I think it was a matter of time before we tried to move him up into that area. We just felt like that was the time to do it yesterday. And, it's certainly a key piece to our offense. You can see how people are defending him. I mean, the first baseman and third baseman are all the way in, so he changes the field. Which, once he gets good at really being able to slap the ball, he's going to be able to slap some balls by the third baseman. The third baseman's no longer going to have to do that. But I think right now they're challenging him to hit the ball. It's almost like that quarterback where, you know, Lamar Jackson early in his career, we're going to make him pass the ball until he shows us he can. And I think that's the same with Enrique Bradfield. It's just like, we're going to make him hit until he shows us he can. And he's going to have to do that. But I think he's got a good presence at the plate. He certainly has good confidence. And, the running speed is obviously in play. But I think he's going to give us better at-bats as the year goes on.
Busy week coming up here. Lipscomb tomorrow, then Missouri, as you mentioned earlier, starting on Thursday. You know, as far as Lipscomb, is it sort of like last Tuesday you played Belmont, a local team that's familiar and wants to come in here and compete?
For sure. Different team than Belmont, though. I mean, Belmont's more of a, I would say, a little more power-based team. This one, Jeff's got a team that really runs. They can scoop. A lot of them can run well. And they always present a lot of problems for us. So, these games are always difficult for us in so many different ways. And our attention is clearly going to be on that right now. You know, and even with short weeks coming up for the next 3 weeks, your primary objective is playing a very good game after a day off on Monday. And that's always a concern of mine for the group. It's just getting back on track again and releasing a lot of the emotions that occurred during the course of the week, good, bad, indifferent. And whatever happened for the week is just resetting yourself as a offensive player and as a pitcher. And you've got to do it against a good opponent. And they certainly provide that for us.
Christian Little had his best game so far last Tuesday. How is his process ramping up from start to start?
Good. You know, more mature, I think. And I say that from a routine standpoint. He's understanding the preparation pieces that are involved so much in a game, which starts tonight. You know, it starts tonight and then moves into the day and then moves into the time that he steps into the ballpark and how he prepares himself. But, you know, it's not easy. You know, any one of us in his situation would be in an awe place of, in terms the awe factor would be in place for us in terms of what we're surrounded with and what we've got to do. And he's a kid that's operated very well. I've got to give him a lot of credit. Now, you know, a lot of the things that I base my maturity factors on are contingent upon academics and organization of their mind and what comes out of their mouth. And I think with Christian, you can see the growth that's taking place every single day. And I appreciate that. And I like that for him because that means he's going to experience more positive outcomes as he moves forward.
Now we're going to have John Williamson, the bowling coach, on next. I got to think you've probably bowled a few frames in your time, whether it's, you know, winter time in New Hampshire or South Carolina or somewhere along the way.
I'm no Mookie Betts, but when you can't go outside, you got to find stuff to do. And, you know, back when I grew up, there was only a landline phone. That was the only technology in the house. So there's no computers, so you had to find other things to do. And it was basketball. You could play hockey inside, but certainly bowling was one of them. But, no, I really stink at bowling, Kevin. There's not much outside of what I'm doing now, and I have a hard time doing that. So I'm not much of a bowler.
You're doing a good job with the baseball part. Tim, thanks so much, for as always, for the time, and we'll see you tomorrow at the ballpark.
Thank you always, Kevin.
All right, we'll see you. It's Coach Tim Corbin. His team won 2 out of 3 against South Carolina over the weekend. Great pitching performances on Friday and Saturday by Kamar Rocker, and of course a no-hitter by Jack Leiter Saturday. South Carolina got him yesterday, but it will be a busy week coming up. 4 games in 5 days, Tuesday against Lipscomb, and Thursday, Friday, Saturday out in Columbia against Missouri. We are going to talk to John Williamson when we come back. His bowling team beat Louisiana Tech for the Southland Conference Championship over the weekend. John is coming up in a moment. And this is Commodore Hour, and it's brought to you by Gupton Jeep, your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters, serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. We're coming right back. The Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Great to have you with us for Commodore Hour on this Monday night in the Music City. I'm Kevin Ingram. Still to come on our show a little bit later on, Michelle Sebastian Gleason will join us, a 1997 Vanderbilt lacrosse alum. We'll talk about what's going on with her these days, and including coaching lacrosse, commentating on it, and maybe a little bit about stand-up comedy. But first, we're going to be joined by John Williamson. His Vanderbilt bowling team won the Southland Bowling League Championship 4-2 in the decisive best-of-7 match yesterday against Louisiana Tech. John, first of all, congratulations. Really happy for you guys. Great work over the weekend.
Thank you very much. You know, it was a weekend that I didn't necessarily know was gonna happen in terms of, like, the way we were going to perform. We've had some ups and downs with all the youth in our team and sort of the COVID restrictions. So it was definitely a pleasant surprise.
Give us a little taste of how it went down yesterday with you guys, you know, winning that decisive match.
You know, I think that, you know, from the weekend we had the best team there, in terms of the our ball motion and the way the balls went through the pins. But we sort of struggled a little bit with emotions. We don't have the oldest team. We had 8 girls that had never been to a conference tournament of the 9 that we took. So it was sort of a new experience for them, and the group that played was basically under the age of 19. So, you know, we struggled a little bit with emotions and that. And, you know, when we got into the best-of-7 part that we won, you know, they sort of settled in and found their own, but it took them about 4 hours to do it. And so luckily we had done enough to be in the winner's bracket that we had that opportunity. But it was just exciting to be a part of for the whole weekend. And then yesterday capping off was great. It definitely provides a lot of experience for the NCAA championship in 2 weeks, because there's a lot of things that happen that our regular season isn't set up like this. So, it gave them a lot of opportunities to learn, a lot of opportunities to grow. And hopefully in 2 weeks we can find the magic again.
Now, it was a long wait to just find out who you're going to play as Sam Houston State and Louisiana Tech were battling in the semifinal. You guys warmed up a whole bunch of times, but, still just hanging out and waiting for the final match to start.
Yeah, we got there at 9 o'clock because we weren't 100% sure when the match was going to start or finish. And ours was sort of set up to start about 10 or 15 minutes after theirs ended. And ours didn't start till about noon. And so, the Sam Houston and Louisiana Tech basically went as long as they could go. It's sort of like a baseball pitcher in the bullpen. You get hot and then they tell you to sit down, and then you get hot and then they tell you to sit down. And so, we tried to do it the best we can. And, like I said, we haven't had many kids that have experienced it. So, for all they know, that's just how it works. So they weren't really annoyed with it or frustrated by it. We just sort of tried to convince them that this is how all the tournaments work, like this.
Now, John, explain what's meant by the Baker format.
Okay, the Baker format is like a traditional format is what if you bowl league or you go to everybody bowls their own 10 frames. And we have a five-person team. And so the traditional format, you have our five people, well, their five games versus your team and your five people and their five games. And then the Baker format is more of like a baseball batting lineup in that my five people will combine to bowl one game. So the first bowler, the first frame will bowl the sixth frame, the second will bowl the seventh, third, and eighth, and so on.
Sure.
And so the five people will combine to bowl one game. And so it's definitely more team driven, because the traditional format, you can have a couple of people that are really good and they can sort of prop your scores up. But in the Baker setting, they only get two frames just like everybody else. So if you have a hole or you have somebody who's not performing very well, it gets exposed pretty easily in the Baker format. So there's sort of two different, it's the same game, but two totally different, I guess there's two totally different strategies to the two games.
Is it harder or easier to find momentum in that format, in that, you do get a little bit of rest between, times that you're up to bowl, but at the same time, you can't just get up there and find that rhythm and that groove maybe as easily as you would under a regular format.
Right. I think it depends on the team and it depends on the individual, because for some teams and some individuals, the Baker format, because it's 100% team driven, is extremely easy to get into. And if you can get into it and you can get into the flow, like momentum sort of switches and flips. It's a lot different than, to me, like other sports, where like in a football game, you can say that fumble changed the momentum. There's some moments like that, single pin spare or a split or something like that can flip the momentum of a game. But like there are other times that things happen in a Baker game that flips the momentum that you can't put your finger to. And so, and I think that goes back more to like sort of the makeup of the team and sort of their own competitive spirits and their own competitive juices, because there are things that will, like, you'll be down in a best of seven, you'll be down like 3-1 and you win it, or 2-0 or 3-0 and you win a game, and all of a sudden you have all the momentum when there's nothing in the world that says you should. And right. So it's a unique sport in that sense. And I mean, if I could figure out how to like harness momentum or create it, we'd be a lot better of a team. But you know, you definitely as a spectator can just see it shift, but there isn't necessarily a something that you can put your finger on.
Our guest is John Williamson, Vanderbilt bowling coach, after his team won the Southland Conference Championship yesterday, beating Louisiana Tech. You and I talked a few weeks ago about this. How difficult has it been for this team just to get ready for a season and just do all the things that it takes to be, you know, focused, and you know, whether it's from a mental standpoint or a physical standpoint or getting in the work, just with all the COVID restrictions and just the way everything was shut down for such a long period of time?
Yeah, I mean, this year is such a – I mean, it's crazy for everyone. And you know, in some ways, to harp on, like, the things that we can't do because of the COVID seems with all of the problems a lot of people have seem trivial. But, I mean – the biggest issues that we've had is, like, you know, we've established a culture and we've established sort of an identity of what our team is and what we do. And it's been very difficult to try to rub that identity and that culture off onto this team because they're not allowed to hang out and interact. And you know, we have three freshmen that live together. And so all our practices are based off of sort of roommate pairs. And so those three freshmen don't really hardly ever interact with the rest of the team. And we have nine people on our team, so that's a third of our roster that isn't interacting. And they don't know anything really about Vanderbilt bowling other than what they've seen and what we've told them about. And, you know, when we try to do Zooms and things, yeah, to, like, educate them and all that kind of stuff, but it's just not the same. It isn't. And so, you know, so if you look at, like, our tournament performances over the year, like, we have good tournaments and bad tournaments, good tournaments and bad tournaments. And I think that those are directly, they can directly correlate to the fact that we don't really have, I'll say, our traditional sort of identity. You know, I think that, like, this weekend showed that somewhere in our, like, DNA, it can come out. But you know, where we are traditionally at this point in the season, you know, I don't think we're 100% there yet. And, you know, so it makes in 2 weeks to figure out, like, what team's going to show up is a question that I don't know yet.
John, as we finish up, give us a quick preview of the NCAA championships coming up in a couple weeks.
You know, in 2 weeks, it'll be interesting. Yeah, I think you see a lot in basketball. There's a lot of missed seeding from the NCAA committee based off of, like, regional play and conference only play and stuff for basketball. There's a lot of teams that are seeded high or seeded low based off of what they were able to do during the regular season. I think you'll see a lot of that in our sport. My hope is that we get the 16 best teams that the NCAA can get to Kansas City, because, you know, I want to win the championship, but I want to win it with, like, the best field and not have it sort of feel like an asterisk because, right, you know, teams got in because of, you know, RPI was screwy and whatever from like COVID restrictions. And so, you know, we'll be in a mini bubble in Kansas City. We'll be there for about 10 days, doing everything in out of one center in Kansas City. So, you know, hopefully we'll execute and play well like we did this past weekend. And, if we do, we have a chance of winning another one.
Well, here's hoping so. John, congratulations on the conference championship, and good luck in a couple weeks as you head out there and try to win another national title.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
That's John Williamson, Vanderbilt bowling coach. His team beat Louisiana Tech 4-2 in the best-of-seven deciding match to win the championship of the Southland Conference yesterday, and they had to wait out that semifinal match we talked about between Tech and Sam Houston, but Commodore's got it done. He has built a winner of a program, a couple national championships already for Coach Williamson and that bowling program. When we come back, our Black and Gold Club segment for this week, we will have Michelle Sebastian Gleason, a 1997 Vanderbilt lacrosse alum. Very interesting person. Loves some lacrosse, coaching, playing, commentating, and also has done some stand-up. So looking forward to visiting with Michelle. Coming up next, this is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Terrific to have you with us on this Monday night as we talk Vanderbilt athletics. Great segments with Tim Corbin and with John Williamson. over the past 45 minutes or so. Every week, we like to speak to a former Vanderbilt athlete, and this is always a lot of fun for me to learn about these folks and their careers and what's going on now. And this week, we have 1997 lacrosse alum Michelle Sebastian Gleason joining us for our Black and Gold Club segment. Michelle, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Now, you're a communications major, a theater minor. You work now with Lakeshore Lacrosse. You do commentary on Vanderbilt games. You got a lot of stuff going on, and I know you just enjoy the game of lacrosse, don't you?
I do, and you didn't even mention mom to three girls. I mean...
Well, yeah, there's that part of it, too. We'll get that in a second.
Yeah, so I, at Lakeshore Lacrosse, I am the director of college recruiting, and I'm also a partner there, so we help run the whole organization. And the reason I actually started it here in the Chicagoland area is that when I went to Vanderbilt, I'd never played lacrosse before. They only had boys lacrosse at my high school, and I was a basketball and soccer player, picked it up at Vandy, just fell in love with the sport. There was a lot of different rules than there are now. Lacrosse has so many rules. If you've ever read Harry Potter, when you first walk into it, it's sort of like being thrown into Quidditch. You're like, I don't know what just happened, but this is really cool. So I just really took to the sport, and I wanted it to grow here. It was growing. And now we have girls going all over the country playing at the collegiate level, and I couldn't be more happy for them. I really find joy in talking to young women, and we only do women's lacrosse. We don't do men's. It's another one of those crazy things where the sports for men and women are very different.
And so I've enjoyed doing that.
Go ahead.
Michelle, for a lot of years, when I thought of lacrosse, I thought of it as a Northeastern sport. I had never seen anything about lacrosse until I went on a trip to Boston one time in the 90s. And I'm like, that's really interesting. How do you feel like the appeal is becoming more widespread?
Well, part of it is Title IX, and part of it is shows like this one and ESPN and sort of the formulation of places like Barstool Sports and little niche places all over social media where the sport can spread where it may not have otherwise done so. And so, like, at Vanderbilt, we have women's lacrosse. We don't have men's lacrosse. And it's sort of forced that change in a lot of areas. Where I live in Chicago, I mean, you're right that it's very much a Northeastern sport. My other friends in lacrosse are shocked to learn that it just became an official Illinois High School Association sport in 2018, and I've been coaching here since 2000, so it's a long time coming, but the growth has been exponential. And even out as far as California, Vanderbilt's got two stars from California. They've got, you know, there's teams with kids from Texas, from Oregon, from Colorado's another hotbed, Chicago is, and then Georgia has got just exploded there. I'm still waiting for it to get a little bit bigger in Vandy's home state of Tennessee. I think having a few more schools in the SEC sort of pick up on it would be extremely helpful with that.
Now, your daughters play lacrosse. What is that like as a parent?
It's very fun, and I coach them when they're younger, and I coach every sport because I enjoy coaching young people. I really love seeing girls gain confidence and learn life lessons. You'll like this. My brand new team has my younger two on it. So it's a fifth grade team with some third and fourth graders on it. And I have a third and a fifth grader. And this was our first game. And we had to meet at 7:30 in the morning on a field that's pretty close to Lake Michigan. So it was not warm and it was early. And half the girls on the team have had me before and half the girls haven't. And they're complaining saying, I'm cold. I'm tired. And I turn around and I say, we're all cold. We're all tired. Do you know what you have to do? And all the girls in my old team, all in unison, said, suck it up. And I was like, that's right. That's what you're going to do today. And some of them have never heard that before. And I'm like, guess what? We're all cold and tired, but we're all going to come here and play and have a great time and learn. And they got it by the end. I love having that light bulb moment where they're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm just here to, you know, have fun and work and learn how to play lacrosse. So I love moments like that.
Yeah, we have an 8-year-old, and we have to tell him that same thing sometimes when he gets that way. Thoughts on this year's Vandy team, which is really having a good season?
They are having a phenomenal season. In fact, I just posited the question to the IWLCA that votes in the poll, why is Vanderbilt not in the top 20 now? They've only lost two games, 1-2. At the time, it was the number two team in the country. Now it's number four, and to the number one team in the country. And luckily, we still have some more games to prove ourselves, but there's really no reason, in my opinion, that they should not be ranked in the top 20 right now.
We're visiting with Michelle Sebastian Gleason, a 1997 Vanderbilt lacrosse alum. Now, in addition to lacrosse, I heard that you've done some stand-up. Now, people have told me, I did morning shows for years and impersonations and all that stuff. People have told me before that I should do stand-up. I want no part of that. What was that experience like for you?
Do you know what it's done for the rest of my life? When people say, oh, were you nervous? Because I give speeches a lot and doing this broadcasting. Say, aren't you nervous? And I said, when you have to stand up and make people laugh, when you're just relaying information, it's easy. So stand-up was really fun in that I could finally say wiseacre stuff and people were supposed to laugh. And actually, I was doing really well at it. I sort of picked to go into the finance world. I used to be in finance before I made the switch to running lacrosse full-time, which I made that decision when I had my daughter, is to make that shift so I could be mom and still have this passion continue. But I love doing stand-up. I actually opened for someone that you may recognize, especially being in the sports world, because he might be one of the most famous comedians for men in particular, because he used to be all over Fox Sports, and he did a great John Madden impression. Have you heard of Frank Caliendo?
Oh, yes. I've seen his act at Zany's a couple times. He's phenomenal. I mean, the way he ties all the impersonations together and makes it into a coherent act, it's just amazing.
Yes, and he's such a nice guy. So I perform with him, and the reason I got into stand-up is I did the conservatory program at Second City in Chicago, which there's a lot of famous alum from. I really thought I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live, and so I started my hand at stand-up. And luckily, there was really nice people that helped me. They said you need a good 5 minutes, and then you build from there. And they had the Midwest tryouts for the Aspen Comedy Film Festival, which is the thing that Robin Williams and Whoopi Goldberg used to do. And they had 150-plus comedians, and I was one of their finalists. And so I got booked from a bunch of shows from that. And really, they wanted me to do the college tour. But I had this lame boyfriend that I ended up marrying, so I decided to stick around.
All right, we can't let you get out of here without an impersonation or two. So give us a couple of your best ones that people would recognize.
Well, you know what? I do a lot of sounds. They used to call me the Michael Winslow of of comedy. But actually, I did have this segment where I did a monster truck impersonation, but I've also stopped a game before with my air horn. So I hope this translates in the radio, but I've gone like that before and stop the game. I've made my mom stop traffic when I did my right at her, and I have made kids stop in their tracks when I lean my head out my car window and I go like that. I don't even know what to do.
like the old school horn.
Yes, it's like a clown nose. So that one kills when you touch your nose and do that at the same time. But I used to do a monster truck thing, and I'd be like, Sunday at the Rosemont Horizon, you'll pay for your whole seat, but you'll only need the edge. You know, stuff like that.
That's great stuff. I met Michael Winslow before. We had him on our show one time. It was phenomenal. Awesome. Just to sit and watch him do all that stuff. It was crazy.
That's awesome. Yeah, he, Police Academy, if you're of a certain age, that was the whole thing back then. I mean, that's why they made, 57 of them?
Right. I don't know how many he was in, but they made a whole bunch of them. Michelle, it is great to speak with you. A lot of fun. Congratulations on all your success and best of luck going forward.
Thank you so much. And thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime. That is Michelle Sebastian Gleason, a 1997 Vanderbilt lacrosse alum who, as you can hear, is a very interesting person working with Lakeshore Lacrosse up in the Chicago area, has done stand-up. Very fun to visit with her, and always enjoy visiting with former athletes every week on our show. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. This is Commodore Hour from the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. About to finish things up on this Monday night. We always like to do what we call closing the door and check around sports going on campus. Of course, for football, spring practice continues for Coach Clark Lee and his team. You can check out social media, Twitter, all the different platforms, Instagram, and get updates. They have some great content going on there. Women's soccer 1-0. The game with Lipscomb yesterday was canceled due to a change in the A-Sun competition days. So they'll play Memphis on Saturday at 6 o'clock at home. Lacrosse, as we mentioned, now 7-2 and 2-0 in the American Conference with a comeback 16-14 win at Cincinnati yesterday. They also won on Friday 10-8. Griffin Gerhardt, 3 goals, 1 assist in the win yesterday. Tennis team ranked number 14. The women's squad lost 4-1 to Texas A&M on Saturday. They'll play Tennessee and Georgia Friday and Sunday at home. And in the final two weekends of SEC play, will be on the road. They are now 12-3 and 4-3 in the Southeastern Conference. Men's golf finished third at the Tiger Invitational in Alabama, 13 under par for that 54-hole event that wrapped up back on Wednesday. And women's golf was 10th in the Liz Murphy Collegiate Classic in Athens, Georgia. That was won by South Carolina. Busy week, as we mentioned, for baseball. Back in action tomorrow, 6:30 start, 6:15 pregame for Vanderbilt and Lipscomb from Hawkins Field. Thanks to our producer, Matt Present. Thanks to Max Herz here in Nashville as well. I'm Kevin Ingram. That will do it for this edition of Commodore Hour. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.
Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Commodore Hour. Tonight's show was brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. The preceding was a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.